TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Professor Ilan Pappé, The Idea of Israel. The Israeli historian spoke on September 14, 2018, at the City Club of Cleveland.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the City Club of Cleveland. I'm Robin Minter Smyers. I'm the president of the board of directors of the City Club. My role today is to introduce our speaker. But before I do so, I want to take a moment on behalf of our staff and my colleagues on the board of directors to acknowledge the controversy generated by our forum today. Since its founding in 1912, the City Club has provided a forum for public engagement here in our community, and we've hosted our share of speakers who've been controversial and about whom we've been criticized. That comes with the territory for a forum devoted to freedom of speech. That said, we did not anticipate that our speaker this week would generate the reaction that we have heard. While we have received some favorable feedback, respected community leaders, valued civic partners, and members of the community have raised serious objections. Some characterize his writings and speech as anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, and hate speech. We who are charged with the stewardship of the City Club take all of the feedback that we receive seriously. We pledge to use this as an opportunity to reflect on the role that this organization plays in the community and our own processes for carrying out that purpose. We believe that our work requires us to listen to others, including our critics, and learn from what we hear. This resolve to listen and learn does not lessen our commitment to our mission. Rather, it lives at its very core. Our speaker today is Dr. Ilan Pappé. He came to us through the Northeast Ohio Consortium for Middle East Studies, a collaborative of academics and scholars at Cleveland State University, Case Western Reserve University, and Kent State University, who invited Dr. Pappé to speak at their campuses. Dr. Pappé was born in Israel to German Jewish parents who fled Nazi persecution in the 1930s. His early life involved military service, undergraduate work in Jerusalem, and a PhD in history from Oxford University. The first portion of his professional career involved teaching Middle Eastern history and political science at Haifa University in Israel. In 2007, Dr. Pappé left Israel and took a post at the University of Exeter in England. He's the author of numerous books on Israel and the Middle East. Ladies and gentlemen, members and friends of the City Club, Dr. Ilan Pappé.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to meet you all. And I would like to begin by one or two biographical notes, although I was very happy with this biographical resume as it was presented a minute ago. The most important part of my biography, I think, is that I was born in Israel in 1954. And as was mentioned, my parents escaped Nazi Germany in the 1930s, and both my mother and my father lost most of their relatives in the Holocaust. And this, for me, is a very formative part of my life. Much of what I do is informed by this family history. I grew up in Israel and the city of Haifa as quite a normal Israeli Jewish boy, which included serving in the army and unfortunately also participating in a war in 1973 on the Golan Heights. That led me in the 1980s to begin a career that combined together scholarship with activism. And the main impulse was realization, as someone who wanted to be a professional historian, that there are hidden chapters in the history of my country that were either wiped out, fabricated, distorted, but in any case were not available for me as a young man, that had an impact on the reality in my own lifetime. And when slowly the pieces of the puzzle unfolded, what emerged was a picture that made me feel that I cannot be indifferent for what had been done in my country in the past and is being executed in the present. I remembered that both my father and uncle used to tell me that although they were very afraid of the Nazi thugs in Germany in the 1930s, the people they really were angry with were those who could do something and didn't do anything. And I didn't want to be such a person. I had a privileged position as an academic in Israel, and I had a privileged position as a Jewish citizen of Israel. And I thought that privilege is a duty to do all I can for those people that I felt were oppressed, colonized, mistreated for over 70 to 100 years in my own country by my own state. And I needed the connection between my scholarly research and my activism to work well together. And one of the questions that bothered me both as a scholar and as an activist, and is the title of this morning's talk, is what I call the idea of Israel. What I meant by the idea of Israel is that there is a conundrum for me as an Israeli Jew, and for many Israelis, I think. How come, given with everything that is happening in the world, there is still a question mark about the legitimacy of the Jewish state? How come, with all the atrocities and the ruthless behavior of both regimes and oppositions in the Arab world and in the Middle East, yet a lot of people around the world feel that the most important example of injustice is that of Palestine? And I wanted to understand it. I wanted to understand the conundrum of a country or a state which, on the face of it, is very strong. It has the strongest military presence in the region, the strongest army in the Middle East, the fourth or the fifth strongest army in the world. According to a lot of sources, it possesses 250 nuclear weapons. It is a high-tech nation. It has, according to its own image, a very vibrant multicultural environment. It has the city of Tel Aviv, which is a safe haven for gay culture, among other things. And yet, with all that security and power, its people feel insecure. They are questioned about their legitimacy in the world. And whatever they do to fight it, they meet conscientious people. Some of them used to be great supporters of Israel who tell them, yes, we know about the high-tech nation. Yes, we know about Tel Aviv. But we know about other things as well. And these other things question your achievements. These other things lead us to ask, who are you? What are you doing? And what is your vision for the future? And I think in order to understand this conundrum, you have to go back to history. What went wrong? And what led to such a large number of people who are honest, who are conscientious, who are educated to say to the Israelis, sorry, we cannot support you anymore. We have a problem with who you are and what you are doing, whether we are Jewish, Muslims, Christians, or Buddhists. And in this country, slowly the number of people who support Israel is decreasing, and you are left with Christian Zionists and Jewish communities being the only pillar on which the support for Israel relies on. The idea of Israel is the idea that the Jews of the world have the right to create in the land of Palestine, their homeland, and to gather all the Jews around the world to be part of a new Jewish nation state where the Jewish right for self-determination would be exercised, where Jews would feel safe from anti-Semitism and persecution, and where they could exercise their culture, tradition, and identity. What is interesting about this idea that originally it was not a Jewish idea. It's a Christian evangelical idea. Back in the 17th century, the idea of Israel was conceived in Europe, where evangelical priests and thinkers had the notion that you can have a kind of a double bill if you think of sending the Jews to Palestine. It's a double bill because on the one hand, you can get rid of the Jews. These were anti-Semitic evangelical Christians. They wanted to get rid of the Jews of Europe. So one part of the bill is you send them to Palestine. The other one was theological. If the Jews return to Palestine, this may precipitate the second coming of the Messiah and the resurrection of the dead and the conversion of the Jews to Christianity or their shish kebabbing in hell if they refuse. Benjamin Netanyahu should be told about it because his greatest friends in this country are Christian Zionists who have this image of barbecuing Jews in hell if they will not convert to Christianity on doomsday. This idea became a far more serious project when Jewish thinkers and activists in Central and East Europe adopted it in the late 19th century. Because they adopted the idea of the return to Palestine not because of Christian evangelical views and not because they wanted the Jews to leave Europe. Actually, most of the Jews wanted very much to stay in Europe, but the Europeans did not allow them to stay in Europe. So the idea was born out of two impulses. The wish to be safe, and it was not safe to be a Jew in late 19th century Central and Eastern Europe, and the wish to redefine Judaism as a national movement. Everyone in Europe in the late 19th century were redefining themselves. And nationalism was the most attractive way of redefining yourself as a modern person. And the Jews had a lot of objective features in their faith and religion that lended themselves to a redefinition of Judaism, not just as a religion, but also as a national identity. So the idea of Israel became a Jewish idea, not just a Christian idea. And Jewish activists began to work for the idea of the return of the Jews to Palestine as a project of salvation, but also as a project of redemption. The problem was with the project of redemption, not with the idea that the Jewish thinkers who thought themselves as Zionists believed that they were the descendants of the Jews who were expelled by the Romans 2,000 years before. That was not the issue. Whether they were right or not is not very important. But they felt that they were the descendants of the Jews who lived during what the Jews believed was the Second Temple, and that temple was destroyed by the Romans at the time of Christ, and that they were expelled, and they were looking to coming back home after 2,000 years of exile. What the problem with the redemption was not the validity of this claim. The problem with the redemption was that someone else was living in Palestine, the Palestinians. So what do you do if you want to return to a safe place, if you want to redefine yourself as a modern nation, if you want to redeem what you think is your ancient homeland and someone else lives in your homeland? Well, you know what people did here when they found someone else living. You genocided the natives of America, as did the Australians, as did the people of New Zealand, as did, to a certain extent, the people who came from Europe to certain parts of Africa. We call that movement of Europeans who flee Europe because they are persecuted and are looking for a safe new haven outside of Europe, we call that movement settler colonialism. People want to replace the indigenous population so that they can build themselves a safe haven, a nation state, instead of the people who lived there, sometimes for centuries, sometimes for millennia. So the problem with the idea of Israel began when the wish to find for the Jews a safe haven and to allow them to redeem an ancient homeland was encountered with the reality on the ground that someone else was already living there. And like so many other settler colonial movements, the idea of the new state could not include the indigenous native population. The early Zionist painters drew beautiful pictures of Palestine in the late 19th century and the early 20th century. But if you look closely at these paintings, and you know the landscape, you can see that the villages do not appear on the hills, that the Arab neighborhoods do not appear in the cities, that the Palestinians are absent from the pictures and from the early 20th century from the photographs. And they also don't appear in the poems, and they don't appear in the fiction, and they don't appear in the early films. And that was ominous, but the Palestinians did not understand it. Because if someone doesn't write about you, if someone doesn't include you in the painting, there is a likelihood that when they would have the power, they would also take you out of the country. And the main problem with the idea of Israel later on was that part of the idea of creating a Jewish nation state was a wish to have a democratic state, because these were European Jews who really subscribed to what was good in Europe, whether it was liberalism, socialism, democracy, human rights, or civil rights. And they understood from very early on that if you want to have a Jewish democracy, you need to deal with the demography. How can you have the first election in a newly founded Jewish state if the Jews are not the majority? What would happen? Would the Palestinians vote for the idea of a Jewish nation homeland? Probably not. And from the 1930s onwards, the idea of Israel was based on either a wish or an active plan to get rid of the Palestinians. And the historical opportunity arrived in 1947, 1948, when the British, who ruled Palestine for 30 years, decided they had enough of the place, referred the question of Palestine to the United Nations, and allowed the Zionist movement to decide by itself how to sustain the idea of Israel with this conundrum: the wish to build a Jewish democracy on the one hand, in a demographic reality where the Jews are a minority. In 1948, the Jews were one-third of the population of Palestine, and most of them came just 3 years earlier. This is why the Palestinians did not accept the United Nations idea that Palestine should be divided between the settlers, who should have more than half of the country, and the natives. No national liberation movement at that time agreed to give half of the country to a movement that they deemed as a settler movement or as a colonialist movement. So this was not a solution. And the result was that neighboring Arab states, who were pushed to act in Palestine because the Zionist movement began already in the last days of the mandate to expel the Palestinians from Palestine, Arab states who didn't want to do much about Palestine were pushed by their own public opinion to send contingents into Palestine on the day that the British left Palestine, on the 15th of May 1948, the day of the creation of the State of Israel. But when they came too late. half of the Palestinians that became refugees were already in refugee camps when the first Arab soldier entered Palestine on the 15th of May, 1948. In my hometown, Haifa, out of 75,000 Palestinians, only 3,000 were left on the 21st of April, 1948. Similar fate awaited the people of Jaffa, Akka, Beisan, 11 towns in Palestine were depopulated. 500 villages out of 1,000 were destroyed and wiped out. And on the ruins, Israel planted forests with European pine trees or built Jewish settlements, sometimes carrying the same name as the Arab village name, in order to claim that this is not an occupation but a redemption. So Safuria became Tzipori, Lubia became Lavi, Ma'an became Ma'an. This tragedy, this catastrophe, this act of ethnic cleansing of the indigenous native people of Palestine was watched closely by the world. The New York Times had correspondents who reported quite accurately what happened on the ground. The Red Cross had emissaries that told the headquarters in Geneva of how Palestinian men, women, and children are being deported from their homeland and from their places where they lived for 800 years. And yet, the world was quite passive for various reasons. First of all, tragedies of that kind occurred 3 years before all over the world at the time of the Second World War. A similar tragedy occurred also in India when the British left it in the summer of 1947. And moreover, the international community felt it could not condemn a movement, a political movement that claimed to represent the Jewish victims of the Holocaust by perpetrating crimes against the indigenous population. It was too sensitive. So the Palestinians were pushed out of their country, lost their homes, lost their lands, lost their properties, and were not allowed to return, while the world was watching and thinking it will somehow resolve itself. Somehow this problem would be forgotten. The problem that Europe was responsible more than anyone else for the creation. First, by not allowing the Jews to stay in Europe, and secondly, by supporting the colonization of Palestine. The idea of Israel remained quite steadfast and unquestioned until the 1980s. Of course, Palestinian historians, Palestinian activists, Palestinian poets and writers were trying to say to the world, look, we are victims of a crime. We are fighting a just war of liberation. But they were, as you know, branded as terrorists, as people who are primitive, as people who have no right to do what they were doing and were condemned. But something happened in the 1980s and the 1990s, of which I write in my book, The Idea of Israel. Quite a few Israeli historians, poets, playwrights went through the same journey as I did. They started looking at the past through more critical eyes. And they discovered these hidden chapters that made them feel obliged, as I felt obliged, to do something for the Palestinian cause as Israeli Jewish citizens. And in the 1990s, it was quite exciting to be in Israel, when all these young Israeli men and women, Jewish Israeli men and women, were learning or relearning the history of their country, understanding for the first time the Palestinian perspective, and wanting, as I wanted, to do everything they can do to rectify this historical injustice. But for the rest of the Israeli Jewish society, this was too much. And in 2000 came the reaction, which I call in the book the Neo-Zionist reaction. This was an attempt from above to silence this internal criticism. This was a way of looking at this criticism as an act of treason. I cannot count or remember the numbers of times that I was called in my own university a traitor just because I taught the events of 1948 as an act of ethnic cleansing, just because I was fighting for civil and human rights for the Palestinians, wherever they were, and just because I said that the right of return of the Palestinian refugees is a sacred right on which I'm willing to fight for all my life. So it became an act of treason to tell the truth about the history of Palestine. And this is why, and with this I will conclude, there is a very big clock here that does not allow you to deviate. This is why, since 2005, in this country, something quite amazing is happening. And this thing is called BIG. I don't know if you know what BIG is. BIG is brand, the Brand Israeli Group. The Brand Israeli Group. In 2005, Benjamin Netanyahu allocated millions of dollars to try and rebrand Israel as a positive country because of all the criticism that came out of the solidarity with the Palestinian people and their struggle. And the first stage of BIG was to talk about the achievements of Israel and to avoid the moral debate about Israel's behavior. And this didn't work. People wanted to talk about the moral behavior, especially young people who have seen what's going on in the West Bank, in the Gaza Strip, in the Galilee, in the Nakab, in the refugee camps. So in 2010, BIG moved to another strategy. And this was to blame anyone who even slightly criticized Israel as an anti-Semite. They called it the new anti-Semitism. This is a fabrication of reality. The vast majority of the most critical voices against Israel in this country are Jews. So definitely they cannot be anti-Semitic. They may be self-hating Jews, as I am. I went to the doctor to find a medicine for a self-hating person, so I'm still suffering from the disease. And for some reason, people in Israel think that it will work. This will not work until we restitute the Palestinian rights, until we give them back their human and civil rights and allow them to conduct normal life everywhere in historical Palestine and coming back to the land of Palestine, there will be no peace, no reconciliation, and unfortunately, the conflict would rage on. Thank you very much.
You heard the Israeli historian, Professor Ilan Pappé. Pappé is director of the European Center for Palestine Studies at the University of Exeter, UK. He was recorded by IdeaStream, Cleveland's nonprofit public media company, at the City Club of Cleveland on September 14, 2018. Find the link to the video on tucradio.org. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.